This is Charlotte Tux. I'm Mike Collins. If all goes as planned, and it will, the Lynx Blue Line extension will open next Friday, March 16th. When that happens, Center City will suddenly be connected to UNC Charlotte and to the University City area. Folks at UNC Charlotte and business boosters in that area believe this will be a game changer. In fact, Chancellor Phil Dubois says this is the most transformational project in the history of the campus. So hopes are high. In this hour, we're going to hear from those eagerly awaiting light rail about what they believe this new connector will mean. The aforementioned UNC Charlotte Chancellor Phil Dubois is with us to talk about that and a little later on about other university issues, including the new athletic director, which you will announce officially or present officially today.
Correct.
Welcome back. Good to see you again.
Good morning.
To have you here. Also with us is Darlene Heater and Toby Holmes. Both are with University City Partners. That's an organization that serves a similar function to that of Charlotte Center City Partners in Uptown. They envision and implement strategies to drive long-term economic vitality in the area. Darlene Heater is Executive Director. Welcome to you.
Good morning.
And Toby Holmes is their Planning Development Director. Thank you for joining us as well.
Glad to be here.
If you'd both get a little closer to those microphones, you will sound like radio stars. If you'd like to join the conversation, you could email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at charlottetalks. Or you could watch us in our very bright main studio here today on Facebook Live. Let me start with you, Chancellor Dubois, about the comment that I just mentioned about the arrival of Lynx being the most transformational project in the history of the campus. That is a big statement. How so?
Well, when you think about major things that have come along since I've been chancellor, including the Center City building, the Epic building, football, this is much more impactful in the community. And I think it's going to be a benefit to our students, faculty, and staff, and to the larger business community, particularly in Center City. It may allow students to live quite a distance from the university, save on apartment costs, save on parking fees at the university, and they can take the light rail up. And then, of course, they can go down into Center City for internships and employment. And as I've often said, they have internships on Friday night. They need to get to.
Yes, they do. That's going to be the biggest
That's
impact,
be
let
the
me
biggest
tell
one.
You right there. I want to come back to some of the things you just talked to as we go through this program. But what does the business community in the University City area feel the same way?
They do. They do. They're very excited. You know, we've been under construction for 3.5, almost 4 years. And we're glad to see the orange barrels coming up.
Right.
University City stayed open for business, but our business center is very excited about this opportunity. We're seeing new development interest. We're seeing existing businesses grow. And all of this is a result of this intentional investment.
You were with Charlotte Center City Partners prior.
Both Toby and I were.
Okay, yeah, before coming to University City Partners. And while you were there, you worked on the 2020 vision plan. You worked on the South End Good to Great vision plan, which I vaguely remember and evidently came true. Do you have similar plans in place at University City? And do you see the same kind of transformation happening in the University City area?
So good question. Mm-hmm. We just had a meeting with our Economic Development Committee last week, and we talked about, I had just come from a ULI meeting, and it was all about South End and what made South End great. And how are we going to expect the same type of greatness in other communities along the Blue Line extension? And loud and clear, what we heard is they invested in placemaking. So South End was a sense of place, and they were very intentional about what happened there. Toby and I have taken those two pages out of our playbook. You know, both of us worked in South End
right. When
we worked at Center City Partners. And so we're investing in sense of place. You'll soon see University City branded infrastructure in our public realm. So we start to create the identity in the public space for University City. We're also investing in placemaking. So we are investing heavily in events and programming in University City. We have a University City Wine Fest here, right here at the lake on April 14th. A great event. There's information on our website. We started a Kids Festival last year in partnership with the university. Huge success. We had 5,000 people attend that event. We're going to do a holiday event this year, and then we're looking at some smaller programming that we're bringing to University City.
So you're trying to, as you say, create the sense of place. It's been very difficult to do in the University City area. And Toby, you have been quick to say that change does not happen overnight. So when do you think people will suddenly look at what's happened out here because of light rail and say, oh, wow, what a change. How long will that take?
Well, we're in a different chassis than South End was, and it took a lot of time there. Light rail delivered in South End, back in 07, and from there, it took a lot of time for it to get to the point now where people are just starting to realize that it's in a boom cycle that's going to continue, and I don't think that it'll take us much less time to get there. That's 10 years ago, and it'll take us 10 years to really hit the ground, and then from there, we'll be able to build on what we have, and the sky's the limit.
Well, you were, as Darlene mentioned, you were, I think, director of Historic South End prior to taking this current job. That was South End was a different ball of wax. It was a kind of a blank canvas in many ways. Although there were buildings there, they were kind of derelict. It felt vaguely, this is hard to imagine for people who didn't live here in the 1980s, but it felt vaguely dangerous, particularly at night. There was absolutely no reason to go there except to pass through it on South Boulevard or maybe South Tryon Street. But the university area already has a lot of pieces in place. What you needed, I think, was connectivity to downtown other than through 85 or 49. So are you anticipating the exact same thing happening here, or is it going to be different in terms of the growth and development pattern?
I think that every area of Charlotte is a little bit different, and we're much different than South End. South End had connectivity problems. It still does have some connectivity problems. I think ours are a little more exaggerated just from the platform we're built on, and that's very auto-centric, which is not uncommon for suburban areas of the 80s and 90s. We have a lot of work to do in the connectivity realm, and that's not just for vehicles. That's also for bikes and pedestrians. As you can imagine, our roads are built to pass people into, out of, and through University City. As we add residents, we have to be able to pass our residents through their community and around their community. So we have to focus on building a different type of road, a different type of sidewalk. And the city has been incredibly helpful with that. It's one of their priorities, but we still have a long way to go.
There is a story, Phil Dubois, about you meeting when you took over the job as chancellor with then-Mayor Pat McCrory, and he took you over to the map or whatever, and he said, what would you think about having a Lynx Blue Line stop on campus? First of all, is that a true story? And secondly, was it even a question that even you had to think about for 2 seconds?
It's partially true. I did visit the mayor my first week in office as a courtesy call. Yeah. And we got in his office, and literally, as I mentioned the other day at the ribbon cutting, even before I could stir my coffee, he was saying, we need to talk about light rail. And his issue was that without the ridership of the university, at that time 20,000 students and 3,000 faculty and staff, we couldn't make the numbers the feds required to get the federal funding, which was 50% of the construction cost. My predecessor, Jim Woodward, had resisted light rail, and I think for good reasons, at least at the time he was asked about it. He was very concerned about the pedestrian character of the campus and what a train running through the middle of it would do to that. A mayor is very persuasive with a new chancellor, and I came back and started talking to people, including the late Dennis Rash, who was our executive in residence. And he said, you know, if you do it right, it'll be fabulous. And so we looked at possible routings, and we found one that worked, the one that's built today. And I should mention, following up on Toby's comment, light rail is making possible things that weren't possible 20 years ago. We've had in our master plan for the campus, 25 years maybe, a hotel conference center. And every time we hired somebody to look at the market, they would say, there's no market for another full-service hotel in University City. And all we had was the Hilton, which has pretty limited conferencing facilities. Once light rail was committed to be built, that changed entirely. Everybody who came in said, you can handle a full-service hotel here, and you can probably handle 400 rooms. So we're in design with Marriott for a full-service hotel at UNC Charlotte.
They will come if you build it. Let me turn that thing around.
Well, that's the thing, because there are a lot of, for example, in the academic side, there are many Southeastern academic societies that won't come to Charlotte because it's not near a campus.
Right.
We hope they'll come now.
Okay. So other than that, how will this, the presence of this train running through your campus 24/7, what will that do to campus life? How does it change the way you, if it does, operate the school?
Well, I think on the academic side, we're now able to think about doing things at our Center City campus that we couldn't do now. You can't expect an undergraduate, 75% of whom are on financial aid, to drive a car downtown, find parking, pay for it, to go to class.
Right.
So we can do some things for undergraduates that we now do with graduates.
So now you could have classes. You could go be at a class at 11 o'clock
right.
on the main campus, and at 1 o'clock you could be downtown.
That's
you?
Right. And you know, we're saying it's 22 minutes downtown, no parking. And there may be other things that happen that bring people to campus, for example. Mm-hmm. We want to fill our football stadium. If people know, they can go to a park and ride in Center City or all the way down to the south side of town
right.
and get to the game safely with no parking. It'll be a great thing for us.
Talk about the sense of place, because I know University City Partners has been working very hard on this for a very long time to let people know, A, we're here, B, we have all this stuff to offer, from various different kinds of residential development to business parks to communications facilities to shopping, et cetera. How does this new element add to the sense of place?
So let me talk a little bit about what is University City, and then I'm going to turn it over to Toby because okay. this is his wheelhouse 100%, and he's doing wonderful work in that space. So University City, second largest employment center, second largest to Uptown. We have about 80,000 people that work up here. Very significant employment, thanks majorly to the university. This submarket is easily accessible by highway, and you know, we have 485, 85, 77. Now we're going to be accessible by light rail, mm-hmm. which is really a wonderful dynamic. 170,000 people live in the University City market area. It's pretty remarkable. We have a very robust retail and hospitality sector. So University City already has all the makings of a great place. We are also anchored by a hospital and a fastly growing hospital that has a wonderful relationship with the university on the research side as well as on the talent side. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of great things that are already here. And the light rail is giving us a really good opportunity to knit a lot of that together.
The interconnectedness that you already have with the airport, with Uptown Charlotte, with other places in the environs because of 485 and 85 and 77 and 49, that's all been there. It's all car-centric, but it's all been there. But the light rail, what happens if I take the light rail and get off at one of the stops near the university area or in the university area? How do I get to the business park? How do I get to other places if I don't have a car?
Mike, this may be one of the most exciting pieces of University City right now, and that is that people will be walking around, and that will help shape our environment. There are, like you mentioned, a few parts of University City in the environment that are very car-centric. We have one thread right now that's really coming together, and I'm really excited about it, and that is connecting UNC Charlotte and the University Research Park. And for those who have not been there, it's an incredibly wooded, beautiful research and business park with fantastic bike lanes. And as a cyclist, I spent some time out there.
Okay.
That will soon be connected through the middle of University City with the North Bridge over 85, and that thread from University to Business Park through our future downtown is going to be really something to see.
We'll talk more about that in a second. Toby Holmes is here from Charlotte, from University City Partners, along with Darlene Heater and Chancellor Phil Dubois from the University at Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Chancellor Phil Dubois from the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. Darlene Heater is Executive Director, and Toby Holmes is Planning and Development Director of Charlotte Center City Partners. And they're all anticipating the arrival next Friday of the first light rail Lynx Blue Line train on the new extension. You were talking about that walking connectedness from the university to the research park. I'm not sure a lot of people in Charlotte know about this at all. Talk more about that, Toby.
Well, the J.W. Clay Station is one of the university stations, and it happens to be next to the lake, which a lot of people recognize immediately in University City.
That's the lake behind the studio.
The lake behind the studio, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we have right now 29,000 students and potentially a few more in the future right across the street. One of our most walkable spots across the street from that here near the J.W. Clay Station and near the studio. And then the Research Park, which will right now is connected by W.T. Harris, but the North Bridge will connect it with some amazing bicycle and pedestrian facilities over I-85, which sets you up. So if you want to ride a bike from the university to the research park for your internship, or if you're in the business park as an employee and want to go out for a lunchtime ride down the Greenway and then around back around the North Bridge, it really is what I think modern suburbia is. So what we have to do now is basically build out our future downtown, which is around the J.W. Clay Station, so we can kind of connect those three with this amazing thread of business park, campus, and downtown.
So we are sitting right now at University Place. We are sitting right now in the new downtown, or the future downtown.
I may have referred to this building before as the first building on Main Street.
Okay. All right. You believe also that a lot of new residents will be coming here because of the Lynx Blue Line. And you said, I think, Toby, that it will be people seeking, quote, reprieve from uptown and south end rents. How quickly you are a traitor to those to those areas. How long will that reprieve last?
He knows
though?
His boss.
How long will that reprieve last? Because as more people come, as the area develops, won't we see south end redux? Won't it just happen here like it happened there and rents will be $1,500 a month?
I don't know. And to be clear, I've got a heart in South End, and I've spent a lot of time there over the years, and I may have drank at a craft brewery or two over that time and made a lot of really
Is that coming here too?
Are really coming? Wonderful friends here. And there may be some of the works from that brewery scene, and I may be working harder on that than some other projects. But, you know, I think that we see a lot of stories about uptown rents and south end rents. And one thing we like about, or I like about University City in particular, is that it's accessible. And now it's more accessible because of the train. So if you want to live in a different environment and pay a little bit less to get a little bit more and be able to ride downtown in 20 minutes, 107 times a day, to your job without paying for parking, that just became possible. So it's not just the rent piece, it's the parking piece, it's the lifestyle piece.
Right.
It's a little bit different animal up here, and I love it.
Development along light rail in South End has caused a great deal of an increased amount of density, both in terms of the development along the rail line, but also in terms of the traffic and congestion, because they didn't widen South Boulevard. They just left it the way it was, and all those people have cars. You have wider arteries here already in the University City area, but do you anticipate, do you fear that the same thing will happen here that happened there as apartments and businesses develop along this light rail line, that access, that traffic will be just not pleasant?
We think about this every hour of every day. Mm-hmm. And I will say that Toby and I probably spend 60% of our time talking about connectivity and roads, because for us, that's probably a number one issue that we need to pay attention to. We've already seen some conversations erupt around that Charlotte's growing at the rate of 45 people every day, and all of these people have cars. We're a regional transportation connected community, so it's natural to want to think that we need to widen roads to accommodate all of this growth, but we think differently. We think we need to add more grid to University City, and we need to give people more ways to get around, that it's not about making big roads bigger. Because when you make big roads bigger, guess what? They're going to fill up,
right.
And then you're going to have to make them bigger again. And when does that stop? At what point do you say enough is enough?
We have NCDOT board coming onto campus tomorrow for their regular board meeting. But it gives us a chance to talk with them about the issues at the university.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to grow. We are at 29,000 students now. We expect our students will continue to bring cars to the campus. So we have to work with NCDOT on those major intersections with the university. They helped us with the south entrance on 49. They're going to help us with the Kirk intersection on 49. And, of course, this whole light rail is creating a new interesting dynamic between people trying to get off campus and trains going by every 7.5 minutes.
As they do their work at University City Partners and guide the development that's going to result from this train arriving in the next 10 years, does this change the character of the campus? Do you then become, if this is going to become Main Street, right where we're sitting right now, and you're not too far from that, are you going to become like a little suburban campus, but with access to everything that Charlotte offers, and that changes the nature and makes you more of a magnet for certain kinds of students?
It really does, because we always stress with prospective students the value of being in Charlotte mm-hmm. as the largest city in the state and all the opportunities it creates in jobs, internships, and entertainment. And this really opens that up to them in a way it didn't before.
And the university's always been out here, a little isolated island unto yeah. itself. Yes, you could get here, but the perception is it's way out there. But it's not way out there. I mean, literally, it took me this morning in traffic.
20 minutes.
From downtown?
No.
It took me 12 minutes to get here, and maybe faster on the highway if there's no traffic than the train will be. But the perception is you're way out there. Does this change that? Does this tie you in to the city of Charlotte in a way that you couldn't even have imagined?
I certainly hope so. I go downtown 4 or 5 times a week for meetings, mm-hmm. and sometimes I don't get 12 minutes. And then you'll have to remember the drive up here for many is 77 to 85. And in the old days, we used to go through the Weave, the intersection of 29 and 49.
Right.
So some people called it the toughest 10 miles in Charlotte. So we think it's going to make a huge difference, even for people coming to concerts on the campus, sports events, art exhibits. We think it's a two-way exchange that'll really benefit both the community and us.
Which is more exciting for students, the fact that the light rail will allow them access to the Uptown campus, access to internships during the school year, or they can go to the College Street bars on Friday and Saturday and not have to worry about driving, which is more exciting for them.
Well, I wouldn't evaluate students' preferences, but I would say that I think all those things are available. Going to Panther games, going to Hornets games, going to the art museums, all within walking distance. The great restaurants we have down there, and I think it's a fair commentary about University City, is we haven't yet had a robust offering of restaurants up here
right.
that aren't more limited service. So we think the students are really going to enjoy it.
You point out, I think it's Toby that pointed this out, that you are park poor in this area, although you do have a greenway, and you're talking about that area that we just talked about with bicycling, et cetera. Are there plans to address the park poor nature of UNC, of the University City area, as these development opportunities continue to progress and present themselves?
As Darlene mentioned, we spend about 60% of our time talking about transportation.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other 38% is talking about parks and libraries in University City and the need to invest in those now instead of waiting for the residents and businesses to show up and then drive up land prices and then set up a scenario where creating those community assets becomes more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, we have greenways here. That's an active transportation facility. We need a place that you can put a blanket down with your family and have a picnic.
We've got 900 acres of park.
And it's beautiful out there.
Are people invited? Are you inviting people out?
Absolutely open. And the greenway, which we worked on with the county on, runs right through the campus and goes up into University Research Park. So,
interestingly enough, the greenway he's referring to is part of the Cross Charlotte Trail. So we do hope that folks will take advantage of that and jump on that 26-mile trail and ride or walk up through the university. It's gorgeous.
The light rail completely changed the character of South End in a very good way, actually, but it completely changed the character of it. And that seemed to be, maybe it wasn't, but it seemed to be the catalyst for apartment developments to start cropping up everywhere, all over town, in Elizabeth, in Noda, along the Central Avenue corridor. And some residents there have complained about the changing character of the neighborhood because of all this development and the congestion and the traffic that came along with it. Do you worry about that here as apartments come with this new rail line? And they will. Do you worry about changing the character, or do you want, does this give you an opportunity to create a character?
I think it's the latter. I think that we're really excited about the opportunity to create, you know, a brand for University City that reflects our major institutions. You know, we're the nexus of education and business. We need a community brand that says that when you reach University City, you feel like you're immersed in commerce and education.
What do you want this to be like? I mean, if you could say, if you were God and you could make it happen tomorrow, what would it look like? What would it be?
We certainly need more urban living. in University City. We're starting to see that break now. We've got a new apartment complex that is at between the Tom Hunter Station and the University City Station, which was really the first transit-oriented development developed residential community. And it was a test for us to see, would people respond? Would they get the rents that they were predicting? They are reaching, I think, rents that they hadn't imagined. And they're seeing really remarkable uptake of those units. So there's, I think there's great appetite for urban living in University City. You know, adding rooftops to what we have now, which is a major retail, commerce, and hospitality kind of corridor, is going to be very important.
But you're not God, and you're not even a governmental organization. You are the University City Partner. So talk to me about that. I mean, you are a business booster group, and you are people that work with business people in the area to try to achieve a better atmosphere for business. What does that mean to residents, non-business people, just people who live here or just people who work for other people here? Who represents their interests?
So we are very careful as we talk with developers about the impact that development is going to have on existing residential communities. We try not to get in the middle of that, but we convene, you know, both sides of the table to talk about what does this development mean to existing community? What does it mean for the future of University City?
The development that's happened in Light in South End and Uptown and other places has been fundamentally renter development in terms of residential. It's been apartments. Do you want lots of apartments here, Toby, or would you like a mix of apartments and condominiums and townhomes and single-family homes to be built along this light rail line? And is that even possible, anything other than apartments?
Oh, absolutely it's possible. A lot of this stuff's market-driven, but we're entering a market cycle now that relies a little bit less on apartments, and we're excited that we may be able to build some equity or some owned units on the light rail. Of course, that's density right on top of the station areas. It's apartment condos right on top of the stations. And then as you move away from the stations, maybe a half mile or more, then we start to see that lower density product. And of course, you know, once you get out into the periphery of University City, that's where that's the areas that are most ripe for single family, particularly with these millennials who we're starting to find out maybe don't want to live in downtown forever. And when they turn about 30 and get married and all of a sudden have 2.3 children and a dog, start to desire that single-family home.
Which you already have up here.
Which we do. And we also have something else, which they've kind of grown accustomed to, and that's access to transit.
Is it true that students out there expressed some concerns over security as the result of the train coming onto the campus?
I think everybody has been concerned about safety in the area. Actually, on campus, we have very little crime. And unfortunately, even because of the size of University City, its geographical size, even if there's a crime 5 miles from the campus, we get blamed for it. But we have added officers for the stop that is on the university campus near the light rail station. And CATS, of course, has its own security and a very elaborate set of visual cameras for watching what's going on in the station. So I'm not really very concerned about it at all.
I mean, is it really any different than bringing people in? Because the campus is completely open to automobiles. I mean, is it really any different?
We are a porous campus. We welcome people to come on as long as they're taking care of business and not creating trouble. But we have 50 sworn officers on campus, and they do a great job collaborating with CMPD on anything that might happen.
So you talked, Darlene, about having trying to create more of a grid system and more of a new urbanist feel out here as the result of this coming in. You've talked about creating this area as a main street and as the center of activity in a downtown. Is that the same as the entertainment district that you'd like to see created?
So as part of our work at the Entertainment District, which is a development that is underway at the University City Station, you know, it's such a unique opportunity. We have 63 acres of greenfield land on one side of the station and 88 acres of greenfield on the other side, which means they're blank slates. Absolutely remarkable opportunity. And yes, we have spent a lot of time working on road grid there. We fought for intersections. We're fighting for traffic signals. Part of that development of these big parcels is all about laying down a road grid through the middle of it.
And what's going to be on that grid? Is it going to be existing businesses? Is it going to be new business? Is it going to be movie theaters? Is it going to be housing? What's going to be on that grid?
A little bit of everything. A little bit of everything. So a rezoning just went through maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago for a golf facility, which will anchor that entertainment district. They've got several restaurants and bars that have already committed to being at that location. There's potential for hotels, and we're in conversations with several there. There will be additional residential and some pretty robust office.
Hmm. What do you want to see more in terms of retail? You have some major shopping centers here. Some of them have fallen on hard times, but that's not the University City problem. That really is a nature of retail in the 21st century problem. So what kind of retail do you need out here to become the kind of self-contained magnet attraction?
Mm-hmm. Well, so we have a lot of empty big box.
I have about a minute left.
And that is by intention because we see remarkable redevelopment opportunities there. So let's keep it vacant so that it's easier to redevelop. What we're really interested in trying to attract is more neighborhood retail that is local and regional in flavor.
I would just say we don't have a Franklin Street. And if University Place can be redeveloped in response to light rail, and we put a hotel there with 226 rooms, we hope that there'll be an energization, if that's a word, of that North Tryon corner with University Place.
Really? And do you think that's possible to happen? You can create a Franklin Street out of whole cloth.
If we can get the students moving across North Tryon at the light rail station and walking into University Place, that's going to be a win.
And I will say that retail is already there. It's just not in the proper form. So we've got a couple great bars. We've got some really good student-oriented restaurants, some really good coffee shops, but it doesn't have the form of a Main Street.
And it hasn't got to be 15 blocks of Main Street. I think if we can assemble two corners with the pizza place and a few other things, we're going to have a downtown, and from there, it's going to grow pretty quickly.
All right. Toby Holmes and Darlene Heater from University City Partners will come back and talk more to Phil Dubois about UNC Charlotte. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Chancellor Phil Dubois is with us from the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. So we're going to spend some time for the remaining moments of the show talking to him about all things UNC. And I want to continue talking for a moment about the Lynx Blue Line. There's a bit of controversy about the $25 student fee. This is a bargain as far as I'm concerned, but there's a little $25 fee that the students will pay per semester for unlimited rides on the Lynx Blue Line. The one side says, you know, the cost of a college education is already too expensive, and here's another $25 fee. The other side is that's riding the train pretty much for free if you ride it frequently at all. Is it necessary to have this mandatory fee on the one side? And why does CATS think it's necessary? They're losing money on this.
CATS, I think, was interested in it because of a guaranteed revenue stream, regardless of ridership. We were interested in it because our students could forego a $450 parking pass for $25 a semester, $50 a year, for unlimited rides, not only on the Lynx, but on any CATS bus, any trolley.
But that's for students who live along the route that would take them to.
But if they live elsewhere, they can drive to a park and ride, and that's free as long as they're riding the Lynx. So it's a good deal for our students, and it's a good deal for CATS. Now, sometimes you hear people say, "Well, shouldn't every higher education institution get that kind of deal?" And the answer is, not really, because we gave CATS a free easement onto our campus, all the land. It's probably worth $5 to $6 million. So we thought our students should be first in line for that kind of benefit.
Okay.
And I would also add that in addition to creating more accessibility for students, we're also starting to create a culture of riding transit. So you have these 18 to 24-year-olds that are now going to have the opportunity and are going to be encouraged to use transit to get around.
Okay. Amazon. Let's talk about that for a second, because Amazon caused a furor in Charlotte when they passed us over here as a location for their second North American headquarters. And they talked about our lack of research facilities and our lack of a research university. That must have really galled a lot of people at the university, because you are a research institution. Why don't people know that?
Well, we're very proud of what's occurred here over the last—
I've talked to other people over there.
20
yes.
years, and you had my dean on, Fatma Mealy came on and talked about the College of Computing and Informatics. But I think the real issue that people lost sight of was it wasn't just that we don't have a research university, but we're not a large research university just yet. And so by comparison to the Triangle or even, let's say, some of the metropolitan areas in Florida, where the universities are much bigger, there isn't a city on the Amazon top 20 that has less than 50,000 students enrolled in research universities. We're at 29.3 and maybe a little bit larger. You don't want to disparage the other institutions in our region, the ones that are much smaller and that also contribute to higher education. But when it comes to things like technology and engineering, you're really looking at a public research university.
But I was going to ask you what happens when you add to your core of 29.3 the student population of Queen's University of Charlotte and Johnson C. Smith and Johnson and Wales even and Winthrop University and Belmont Abbey College and Wake Forest's campus downtown. When you add all those together, is it because they're not necessarily research universities or research facilities?
But the same could be said of the other institutions in the top 20 of Amazon. They have a variety of private non-research institutions that would also add to their totals.
So when you add all those together, what's the total of – because the student population was a figure that they wanted. They wanted a certain student population. What's the population when you add all those places together?
I don't think I know the answer to that.
And I left out CPCC.
Yeah. So. Well, and again, all the educational institutions in all of these regions are quite robust, but they chose to compare the research power because that also relates to things like technology transfer and software development that these places like Amazon need.
Mm. Talk to me about the importance of the connection, or what is the connection? What am I trying to say? What the importance of the connection between the presence of a university and economic development?
Well, there's a very easy statistic to remember that if you can increase the educational attainment of a region by 1 year, you will have a 17.9% increase in per capita GDP. So it's just to everyone's interest, society and individuals, to have more higher education rather than less. And as we've seen, the $50 million that we do in research, externally funded research, while it in and of itself is small compared to the larger and older research institutions, it has a multiplier effect. There are people employed on those dollars. Mm-hmm. They buy houses. They rent apartments. They buy food. They go to the dry cleaners. So as you build the research capacity of a university, you have a lot of secondary impacts in the community.
What has been the impact of UNC Charlotte on Charlotte?
Well, you've seen, I made a comment the other day when we did the ribbon cutting, then when Miss Bonnie picked the location of the university,
Bonnie Cohn,
we were out on a dairy farm. There was a barn on the campus, and it was full of manure. And the story was that Miss Bonnie stood on a cow pie and looked out and said, this is the place, this is the place, because she could envision Charlotte growing out to the university, and that's what's happened.
Wow. But has that disconnection worked against you? In other words, now that the light rail line is going to be a connector, it's going to connect you to downtown, is all this going to change over time very quickly?
I think so. And you've got to remember, when I got here as chancellor in 2005, I actually made an early visit in March. And at that time, we were dedicating the ground that Daniel Levine and the chancellor had worked on for a Center City campus. Mm-hmm. That came to pass. In my very first year as chancellor, Erskine Bowles was the president of the university. We got the Center City building funded. And now we have a way to connect them in ways that we never did before.
Tech talent. Let's talk about that, because one of the other Amazon things was we had an insufficient number of tech talent at our beck and call in Charlotte. UNC Charlotte has a highly regarded computer and informatics department. It's the largest of its kind in the state of North Carolina. So is that unfair or uninformed criticism?
Maybe a little bit of both, but I do think it's true that we have a fast rate of growth in tech talent. That's what we could claim. We were relatively disadvantaged in the existing number of tech. And the other issue you have to remember is if Amazon's coming in with all these jobs, they're going to steal from other institutions, and therefore they're going to need tech talent as well. So our College of Computing and Informatics, in a college that is in a university now 29,317 students, when we get to 35,000 or 40,000, we'll be producing more.
So I'd like to just chime in on that, sure, because I sit on that board of computer informatics. They graduate every year about 700 students. More than 70% of those students stay in Charlotte, which is absolutely remarkable. That is significant talent into our community outside of the folks who are just moving here because Charlotte's a great city.
That's actually a lower figure than I had because I was going.
It's actually for the university as a whole, not just the college. It's 86% stay in the state, and a little over 80% stay in Charlotte.
Right.
That's amazing.
And 92.6% of undergraduates come from North Carolina. 26.8% are from Mecklenburg County.
But I will also add that the fastest growing enrollment for computer informatics, and I think that I have this right, one of the quickest growing are students coming from Wake County.
Let's talk about what's going to happen today, later on today. A fixture in UNC Charlotte athletics has been Judy Rose. How long has she been the athletic director?
Athletic director for 28 years and at the university for 43.
And she was a pioneer because at the time she became athletic director, there were very few. We just ran a piece this morning.
She was third woman.
Yeah, very few athletic directors and very few mentors. And she's done a pretty darn good job, one would say, of doing what she did.
An amazing job. If you drive through our campus, that entire district is a testament to her success.
She is retiring in June, and you are announcing today or presenting, I think the announcement's been made, but you are presenting your choice to be the next director of athletics, Mike Hill. How did you come to choose him?
We hired a search consultant, Gene DeFilippo of Turnkey. He identified a pool. We interviewed about 13 people, got it down to two, and then got it down to one. Mike visited with about 45 people on campus in a day-and-a-half interview, and he was just spectacular, and people are really going to enjoy him. There's a very – it's hard to describe exactly what it is, but I'd call it cultural fit, and he wants to be in Charlotte. His parents grew up here. He has family here. He has a place up in Blowing Rock. We're delighted to have him.
Where is he coming from?
University of Florida.
University of Florida. The 49ers basketball team has had a disappointing season this year, the one that the Observer called the dreariest men's basketball season in recent memory. I know that's just music to your ears. And the football team had a 1-11 season. But isn't that to be expected of a young program? Seriously. How many seasons do they have under their belt?
On the football side, we have five seasons total. Okay. We only have three in Division I, and we made the quickest possible run up to BCS football of any institution. So I think their fan expectations a little out of line with reality in Division I football. Mm-hmm. Men's basketball, another story. We haven't been in the tournament since 2005.
13 now, years, right?
That's when I arrived. Yeah. I didn't cause this.
It's
me.
No.
but that's one of Mike's first jobs is to go in, meet with the coaching staff, try to assess where we're headed and make a decision about moving forward.
But here you are, the chancellor of a university, which is an academic institution. And we've been talking about the need to build that academic institution so that we can attract the Amazons of the world. And we're sitting here wasting airtime talking about college athletics. I'm just kidding about
Well,
the
you brought it up.
I'm just kidding about the wasting airtime. But how important are marquee sports to any university, but to the University of North Carolina, Charlotte in particular?
I think Mike Hill said this during his interview that 50% of the people who come in contact with the university come in contact through the athletic program. Mm-hmm. So it's important to have credible performance in your athletic programs. You can't always have it every year. That's the one thing fans, you want to remember that you've been successful over a long period of time. But, you know, the same team that Billy Donovan took to two consecutive national championships at the University of Florida, where Mike was, I think his last season, he had something like a 15-16 win-loss record. So these things go in cycles, but generally, if you have a program that is well-run, competitive on the field or the court, and does it in the right way, we're graduating 92% of our student-athletes who exhaust their eligibility. That's a good thing.
I was going to ask you how you keep a good balance because so many schools in recent memory have not been able to do that. They've let the tail wag the dog, and the consequences have been unpleasant. How do you keep the balance?
Well, it comes down to people, of course. You got to have people committed to compliance, committed to integrity, committed to gender equity, committed to treating all students as students to get them their degrees. And that's the way we've always run it. It's been embodied in our chancellors, in our AD. And one of the things we looked at when we were hiring Mike Hill was, do we have a people? Do we have a person who shares our value set? And we do.
Okay. There have also been some calls in recent days to change the name of the school from UNC Charlotte to, I don't know, the University of Charlotte. What are your thoughts on that?
It's not a new call. It's been renewed, I guess. It started, I heard it my first year here. People don't really understand that it's not even a decision for the campus to make. It ultimately has to be approved by the General Assembly, the Board of Governors, the Board of Trustees.
What's the chance of that happening?
Well,
zero.
I don't know, but it's
zero.
It's also it could be expensive, branding change like
sure.
that. I think the real issue, though, is people who want the name change think that we would have a more clear identity if we were separated from UNC. And that's something you would have to study. Personally, I don't think that's the case. I think many faculty come to the University of North Carolina at Charlotte because of the University of North Carolina. And I think there have been two movements within the system, and they both moved toward the system. Pembroke State became UNC Pembroke, and the North Carolina School of the Arts became the University of North Carolina School of the Arts.
It seems to be there is a patina attached to the UNC part.
There is brand value. Yeah. There's brand equity.
Some people were very concerned when Margaret Spellings took over as president of the UNC system a few years ago. We had her on this program shortly after she became the president. I have the impression, correct me if I'm wrong, that this has been a good move. It's working out, isn't it?
For the chancellors, she has been terrific.
Was it a surprise to you that she's been terrific?
A little bit. I had been around. Actually, I just became chancellor when she and Jim Hunt came onto campus to announce their Higher Education Commission study of higher education, which was largely critical of higher ed. But I'll say Margaret is terrific, listens well. Her value set is just right for the University of North Carolina as the People's University. And she really does want to help students get that college degree.
And you've said that she's been exceptionally good at getting input from the chancellors. Is she acting on that input?
Well, she has to work with her board, and I'm sure you're aware the Board of Governors is a large, complex body of people who have differing views, but I think she's a strong leader.
She's going to be back on this program, by the way, on March the 19th. What should Charlottesians know, and we only have a minute left, what should they know about UNC Charlotte that they might not know, and about the rest of the world? What should they know about the school?
This is a school of opportunity. This is a school that Bonnie Cohn envisioned to help every student who was capable of college-level attainment to get a college degree. And we have 42% of our students are first-generation college students. We have one of the most diverse campuses in terms of racial and ethnic composition in the UNC system. It's got about 85 academic programs at the undergraduate level, over 60 at the master's, 23 at the doctoral.
What do you need that you don't have? We have about 15 seconds.
We're going to need some facilities as we grow.
But you're building all the time out there.
We are, but most of it's been on our nickel.
Oh, I see.
I need someone else's nickel.
Okay. Well, you've heard the call, folks. Send your dollars. Phil Dubois, the chancellor of UNC Charlotte, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. And Darlene Heater, executive director of University City Partners, and Toby Holmes prior to that, the planning and development director. Thank you all for the hour.